So y'all would not believe the time I have had writing this sermon for today. The irony of getting writer's block on a piece about creativity. But there you go. For a writer, it's one of the worst things to be stuck on that blank, white page. And especially during winter break, the kids are home from school, there is no escape. But I had to pull it together somehow, because this is the first worship service of 2017. New beginnings, new goals, new inspirations for my beloved congregation. Well, and that's when I realized that was my problem. My creativity was blocked because I was so afraid of failing, of not bringing the most inspiring, the most creative, the most courageous message to you to kick off the new year. I was afraid of letting down the people who need me to be those things. The origin of courage is the French word for heart, cœur. To have courage is to live with your heart. Bravery often comes into it as well, because a lot of the time, living with your heart is really scary. If you're lucky, it's not. But living with your heart means putting your heart out in front. It takes the lead. It does reconnaissance. It leaves our heart exposed and vulnerable. A heart in that position, if it takes enough beatings, it might not have the resilience to recover. And that makes me hesitate every single time. I need to go out and do something that leads with my heart. Brené Brown once asked herself, when she was examining her own vulnerability, does this mean that our capacity for wholeheartedness can never be greater than our willingness to be brokenhearted? I spent many, many years afraid of a broken, irreparable heart. I saw it as a fragile thing made of glass, easily shattered, unless every moment was known ahead of time and so carefully planned. It was a very safe life, and it was devoid of true creativity because it carried no risk. It wasn't me creating me. When I finally started down to this path to professional ministry after years of not leading with my heart, it became clear that I had to learn how to take risks, how to be courageous in my creativity, because how can I serve a congregation if I can't show them who I really am? Last year, when I first told you the story about why I started running, it was about proving something. It was about proving someone else wrong in their assumptions about me. And it was also about making terrible decisions when you're angry, but we're just gonna skip over that part. It was, in a way, a creation narrative. And in that particular instance, it happened to succeed. What I talk less about, at least from the pulpit, is how I still fail every single time I put on those running shoes. Because I'm really bad at running. I'm really, really bad at it. I'm slow. I will never be fast. I always look ridiculous, even in my snazzy outfits. I sweat buckets. I smell no matter how much deodorant I put on. And I have never, ever, ever had a runner's high. It is a lie, I swear. It doesn't exist. I fail at running on a regular basis every time I go out. But then I do it all over again. And sometimes I do over 13 miles worth. And occasionally, if I'm lucky, someone hands me a shiny medal and I get to eat a lot of really terrible but delicious food for one day. But what I come away with, and what leads me to always sign up for another race, so I have to keep training, is that I did something that I am not good at all. I did something that I will never be good at. I did it just for the experience of doing it. And it hurt a lot, but I didn't die. I survived. And my heart is a little stronger each time that I do it. What was once made of glass that I was afraid would turn to stone if I let it hurt too much turns out to be a living muscle, warm and flexible and willing to lead me into amazing new realities of my own making, as long as I keep running. I may have started running with a purpose, with this expected result, prove somebody wrong, right? But it soon became something I did for its own sake, because of the experience itself. When Marie Curie wrote about her life's work, she said, "We must not forget that when radium was discovered, no one knew that it would prove useful in hospitals. The work was one of pure science. And this is a proof that scientific work must not be considered from the point of view of the direct usefulness of it. It must be done for itself, for the beauty of science. And then there is always the chance that a scientific discovery may become, like radium, a benefit for humanity." While scientists sometimes describe the things they encounter in their work as beautiful, it's not often that we as a culture consider the act of science itself as an art form, as a creative act of beauty. And yet it is. Science, in the way that Marie Curie approached it, was worthy of doing for its own sake. And when we equate it with other forms of art, like music and painting and the written language, it then also must be held over and against the demands of the humanities, our morality and ethics. One cannot tell the story of Marie Curie's discovery of radium and the good it did for many lives as a cancer treatment without also telling the story of how unchecked consumerism took this scientific, artistic discovery and proceeded to market it without further experimentation. These people were all absolutely convinced that there was nothing else to be learned, no more creativity to be found except what could line their pockets. Instead of doing what Marie did, continuing in the science, in the creative act of loving the world by learning about it, they assumed a false state of static, complete knowledge. Radium began to be used in cosmetics, as store-bought health aids, and in the most well-known case, in paint on watches. The women who did this work, who were told to lick their paintbrushes to make points for details on the dials of the watches, they're known to history as the Radium Girls. Their lawsuits barely covered their living and medical expenses, as the cancer caused from the radium exposure slowly killed them. Even Marie Curie herself died from near constant exposure to radioactive elements throughout her entire career, although she lived much longer than the people who consumed the radium products. The Radium Girls were not given the full breadth of knowledge. And even when they began to investigate why they were all so suddenly sick at the same time, the company outright lied to them to protect their assets and said they were the picture of health. And yet Marie Curie, who was forced to flee her home and her country to a strange place where she had no connections, no safety net, changed the world not because she thought she could, but because she felt compelled to try new things just to see what would happen. The results of these experiments, as we have also learned, cannot be put to use without ethical and moral examination. But Marie Curie was willing to risk her own life in order to live it to what she felt was the fullest extent. Last year, one of Reverend Gale's sermons talked about how when we're seeking to innovate, if you can aim, then it's not really innovation. Because if you can aim at it, it's known territory. It's already been discovered. True creativity, true experimentation requires a willingness to shoot without a target. It requires shooting just to see where it lands. Now, what this often reminds me of is how people talk about desperation, any port in a storm, settling for what you can get. So a lot of times it's framed as a bad thing. And if you're resigned to only shoot once and commit yourself to wherever it is that you end up, yeah, it's probably not the best well thought out idea. But leading with the heart, hearing those whispers and figuring out what they're saying to you, having courage, embracing creativity is being willing to shoot without a target and then do it again if you don't like where you land. Innovation is scary. Creativity is scary because they are unknown quantities, and our lizard brains, oh, do they hate the unknown? Unknown means danger. Danger, yeah, danger. But the unknown is also where we find freedom from our chains. The unknown is where we catch the glimmer of our vision, the tiniest seed of possibility. The unknown is where we must go to build something that works better than what we already have. And that, my friends, is ultimately why creativity is so very, very scary. Because by its nature, it seeks to undo the status quo. It seeks to undermine stability, to make you examine everything that you've been told is exactly how it ought to be. It's why artists are the first prophets of a revolution. It's why tyrannical regimes seek to keep people so desperate and anxious that they cannot feel the pull of their hearts. They cannot hear those whispers, much less figure out what they're trying to say. And it's why the rich and the powerful always seek to own and control scientific innovation. But today I'm going to let you in on a secret. That courageous, creative prophet who will change the world, it's you. Whether it's writing or a science experiment or designing a new curriculum or making music or painting or engineering or any number of other things that we do with our creativity in the world, something as yet unknown in the world is calling from your heart. In this new year, let us in this community help each other find our courage. Let us help each other explore the beauty in this world just because it exists. Let us find freedom in celebrating our creativity, no matter how scary, and no matter how many times we fail. May it be so.